You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, President Obama discussed strategies to further weaken ISIS in a press conference this afternoon. We find out what he laid out and whether it's likely to succeed.
First, the opening ceremonies at the Olympics kick off tomorrow, and experts are worried about Zika, which has hit the host city of Rio de Janeiro very hard. The Centers for Disease Control also just released an unprecedented travel warning earlier this week. The warning advised pregnant women and their partners to avoid travel to a small community north of Miami, where Zika is actively circulating. It's the first time the CDC advised people not to travel to an American neighborhood.
Dave O'Connor joins us now to talk about what researchers are doing to predict the next Zika, the next big viral outbreak. He's a professor in the Department of Pathology and Laboratory Medicine at UW-Madison. Dave, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, Dave, we saw a number. Since 1980, the global number of viral outbreaks per year has tripled. Are we really seeing that many more viral outbreaks, or are we getting better at detecting them?
I think it could be a combination of both. Certainly, the ease with which people can travel across the world in a day or two, combined with the fact that we have better surveillance for viruses and better tools to detect new viruses, means that it's easier than ever to see that these types of outbreaks are occurring. The question is how many of those new outbreaks that we're seeing, or new viruses that we're seeing, are ones that we really have to worry a lot about in terms of their impact on health.
Right, and that's the big question. How do you look at this world jam-packed with different kinds of viruses and figure out which is the one that is going to be a health hazard around the world?
Right, and that's the million-dollar question. I don't think there is a single good way. There is no single smoking gun that we can use to see a virus that we don't know very much about and say, this is one that we need to be worried about, and this if it hasn't already impacted people's health. So, you know, to paraphrase from an old Simpsons episode, you know, the NIH isn't going to give money for viruses that don't make us sick yet.
Where do a lot of the more recent viral outbreaks we've seen come from?
Well, in terms of where they arise from, many come from animal reservoirs. So either livestock or wild animals, and certainly as people have encroached upon the natural habitats of animals and there's increasing interactions between people and animals, those sorts of viral transmission events are more likely. In terms of where most of those viruses are coming from, it seems like regions near the equator seem to be particularly vulnerable in terms of having viruses jump between people and animals, and then between different species and animals.
Why would that be? Is it that there are just more species closer to the equator?
Yeah, I think it's that. And then you also have a lot of habitat loss associated with a number of factors, including increasing population density. And then also more recently, the changing climate is, you know, stressing ecosystems in a way that it hasn't before. And it's putting animals and people in places where they haven't come into contact previously.
Could it be the situation in some cases that there's a human population that has been in contact with this virus for a long time, but it only spreads more when it comes into contact with a different group of people, with the world we can travel really easily in?
Sure. And so initially, when Zika virus was first seen in Brazil, suspicion immediately was put to the World Cup that had been in Brazil in 2014, and the suggestion had been that someone who had traveled to the World Cup had brought Zika to Brazil. Now we think it was probably not the World Cup, but perhaps the Confederations Cup that happened a year before, or some other event that brought together people, particularly from the Pacific Islands, to Brazil. But the point's the same. People came from one part of the world to another part of the world and brought a virus that was able to get a toehold in a new population.
We're talking to Dave O'Connor with the Department of Pathology and Laboratory Medicine at UW-Madison about efforts to predict the next Zika, the next Ebola, viruses that are out there in nature and animals, maybe in our livestock, that can make the jump to humans. Let's look at that livestock part of things. I know different kinds of flu strains are often associated with livestock. Do we have kind of a warning system for possible viral pathogens there?
Yeah, I think the flu field has really led the way in terms of establishing surveillance around the world, looking in birds, looking in livestock, and looking in people, and trying to very quickly identify when there are flu strains that have some of the attributes that we might associate with severe human infections. But again, truthfully, we don't really know what we're looking for in terms of new types of flu that haven't made people sick in the past. We can only look for those types of flus that have signatures of strains that have previously made people sick. So when we don't know what we don't know.
Do we have general good practices in place for when there's a new viral outbreak for behavioral reactions we can make, efforts to research vaccines, our reaction, or are we just always scrambling to catch up?
Well, I hope that these the series of outbreaks that we've seen in the last several years, beginning with Ebola and now with Zika, is going to lead to a more coordinated response. I would say that the response still tends to be somewhat fractured, and certainly with Zika, you can look at the slowness with which there's been a concentrated, coordinated federal response, and see that it's not as seamless as perhaps it could be. You have lots of stakeholders in government, in academics, in pharmaceutical companies, in small biotech, all sort of working towards the same general goals, but without a whole lot of coordination. And frankly, some of that coordination has to be driven by funding, which has sometimes been slow to materialize.
Is it the problem that we just do funding like, oh, there's Ebola, we need Ebola funding, or, oh, there's Zika, we need Zika funding, as opposed to there will be viruses in the future, we need public health infrastructure, state, national, international to deal with it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we have FEMA because we know that there are going to be emergencies that the federal government is going to have to come in and manage. And Tom Frieden of the CDC has suggested that we have a FEMA with a PH to deal with public health emergencies that we know are going to come in the future, but that we can't predict as a line item today. So have a set of people and funds and infrastructure in place that can mobilize quickly when these sorts of epidemics begin to occur without necessarily having to know ahead of time what they're going to be.
I think in a lot of people's minds, well, I'll say my mind anyway, that's what we think the CDC is there for. That's what happens in the movies. The guys in the CDC lab suits show up when there's the outbreak. That's not really what the CDC is laid out to do?
Well, the CDC does that to some extent, but the CDC has limited resources itself and is spread across a wide variety of different types of diseases. So they can come in and do some of the epidemiology, but there's a lot of basic research, vaccine development, therapeutic design, developing other interventions, testing behavioral changes, mobilizing, you know, marketing and social marketing to raise awareness that the CDC can't do all on their own. If you were to organize something like FEMA under the aegis of the CDC, that would be entirely reasonable, but it has to be a multifaceted response that goes beyond just surveying for the presence of people who have a particular virus.
Now, if I were in your line of work looking at potential future viral outbreaks, I think I'd be a very much a basket case. I'd be very scared about what's out there. Is that how you feel, or should we be more a little more calm than that about the world of dangerous viruses out there?
Well, I think you can look at something like Zika, and you can be reassured because 80 to 90% of the people who are going to get it aren't even going to know that they've been infected. So you use these sophisticated diagnostic tests to determine that someone has a virus in their blood that didn't make them sick, that didn't cause any illness. And for most people, most of the time, we are living in a microbial world. We have viral infections, all of us, all the time. And we don't know it. It doesn't necessarily make us sick. It's when you have viruses that begin to behave unusually. So in the case of Zika, the two unusual attributes are the fact that it seems to be associated with causing fetal birth defects, and that it has modes of transmission that are unusual for a virus that's spread by a mosquito. It can be transmitted sexually, for example. When a virus stops playing by the rules, then we need to work really hard to figure out what the sort of risks are. But we need to realize that at an individual level, the risks are still quite low.
Dave, thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right, thanks for having me. Take care.
We've been talking to Dave O'Connor, professor in the Department of Pathology and Laboratory Medicine at UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about how researchers are trying to find the next big viral outbreak.